We are talking these days about the theme legacy, reflections on what we leave behind. And we've talked thus far about the things that several folks have left behind. We began by talking about Adam and Adam's legacy of sin and death, but also Adam's legacy of redemption. For Jesus, our Christ, was a descendant of Adam too. We talked about Abraham, the dreamer. Abraham who reached for and dreamed for more, for responding to God in remarkable ways. Abraham is remembered because God's dream became Abraham's dream. And so his is the legacy of a dreamer. But today we turn to Moses. And it is frightening to do so. Because Moses' legacy is formidable. Just look at the Hebrew Scriptures. He dominates the entire narrative of the Old Testament. There is no historian who speaks, no lawmaker who writes, no prophet who prophesies, no songwriter who sings, no philosopher who thinks without referring to Moses. His legacy is formidable. The story of Moses begins in the first chapter of Exodus, and it continues for 40 chapters, but it doesn't end there. It takes the additional books of Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy to begin to do justice to the legacy of Moses. He is a towering figure in history. There are few like him. His leadership saved his people and led them on the path of restoration. Restoration as a nation, but spiritual restoration as well. A journey which Moses not only led, but in which he participated. It was Pope Julius who called upon Michelangelo to carve a statue of Moses. Here you see a picture of it. And if you want to see it closer, come and see it after the service. And it should appear on the screen for you too. It is a mammoth figure in Rome. Some of you have seen it. Though Moses is in a sitting position, the statue is still nearly 9 feet tall, with flowing hair and a stern expression. Michelangelo completed this work in the year 1515, almost 5 centuries ago, and it remains one of the most remarkable pieces of sculpture that has ever been created. And I think that's the case because it reflects the stature of Moses, the leader of Israel. And so the historian concludes his writing of Moses in Deuteronomy by saying this: "Never since has there arisen a prophet in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face." To speak of Moses' legacy is a daunting task because it's difficult to grasp because it is so large and it is so long ago. So this morning, I would like to break it down for you just a bit and speak of Moses' legacy in just a few more manageable pieces. And I'd like to use some persons, some more contemporary persons than Moses, to illustrate some of the components of Moses' leadership. Let's begin. Oh, I've got some stuff in my way here. I'm going to have to move around the microphones. Let's begin by talking about the legacy of Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln became president of our country on March the 4th, 1861. Between the time of his election on November the 6th and his inauguration on March the 4th, you know what happened, don't you? 7 states of the Union seceded just in that period of time. And then, within 6 weeks after his inauguration, 4 more states seceded from the Union. The great issue that divided our country in those days was, of course, human slavery. And Lincoln was single-minded. He had a single, clear, unwavering focus when he came to office. And his focus was not freedom for those enslaved. He was determined, above all else, to preserve the Union. He, in fact, didn't care much about slavery at that point, and he angered Northern abolitionists as much as he angered the Southern secessionists. An example of that is when he deployed General John Fremont to the West to deal with some of the civil disobedience that was going on in the border states of Missouri and Kansas. General Fremont issued an order of emancipation, freeing all of the slaves who were held in those territories. And then Lincoln rescinded his order. Lincoln's unflagging energy was given to preserving the Union. And only later, when it became clear that the only way to preserve the Union was to guarantee liberty to everyone, only later did he give himself to the full emancipation of indentured and enslaved persons, which gained its full expression in the 13th Amendment to the Constitution. Lincoln's legacy and the fact that he towers in history as he does is the result of his single-mindedness. He had a single, clear objective from which he did not waver. In the same way, Moses had a single, clear objective from which he did not waver. Let my people go was his purpose and his mantra, fulfilling God's command to lead the Hebrew people to freedom from slavery in Egypt, to lead them out of Egypt into the land that God promised. That was all that concerned Moses and all that consumed him. He and Lincoln had this in common. They had one dominating, overarching purpose, and they were not distracted from it by any of the myriad of other things that demanded their attention. What would it be like if you and I, or we as a church, could live our lives that way, with a clear, singular purpose? This is what God desires of me. This is what God's desire, God's call in my life is all about. And this is what God's call for our congregation entails. To hold that clear objective and purpose in our minds, never waver from it. What would it be like? If the time in which we live is anything, it is the age of distractions. I saw a news report this week where teenage boy's mother had what looked like a ream of paper in her hand. What it was his monthly phone bill for all the texting. Some of you saw that story. It was literally a ream of paper. And the mother stood behind her son and said, "No, I don't think my son's distracted. I think he's able to give his full attention to his schoolwork and everything he's supposed to do." If we live in an age that can be characterized by anything, it's the age of distractions. And there are so many things that demand and call for and require our attention. How can we hold ourselves to a clear, singular purpose as we live? Well, Lincoln and Moses are testimony that it can be done. And when we work at it and accomplish it, the legacy that we leave is remarkable. Well, let me move on. The second person I'd like to say a few words about was a musician. Ludwig von Beethoven is a name that most of us know. And you certainly have heard that he was one of the most remarkable musicians who's ever lived, and I think that's true. Early in his life, early in his adult life, he moved to Vienna, where he immediately became a well-known sensation. Initially, his fame centered around the fact that he was a virtuoso pianist. He could play the piano like few others ever could. But he soon became known as a remarkable composer of a great variety of music. And his fame grew remarkably, even in Vienna. Vienna, which was then, as it is now, one of the most challenging venues for music in the world. And then, the worst thing that can happen to a musician happened to Beethoven. Slowly at first, but then remarkably more quickly, he became deaf. Not able, by the time he was 40, not able to hear a thing. And yet, he continued to compose and perform his music. Beethoven was responsible for developing a number of devices, mostly rods of wood and metal that he would hold against his cheek or the bones of his face, and then with the other end extended down to the sounding board of the piano, so that when he played, the vibrations of the sounding board would be transferred to the bones of his face and he could feel the music in that way. Later on, as his deafness became more profound and complete, you can imagine this by looking at the Steinway over here. He cut the legs off his piano so that the piano laid flat on the floor. And by doing that, when he played, the sounding board at the bottom of the piano would vibrate and it would transfer those vibrations to the floorboards. Must have been pretty loose floorboards. The vibrations would be transferred to the floorboards, and by holding his head against the floor as he played, he could feel the vibrations of the music, and thus he could continue to write his music. Late in his life, after his deafness was complete, he wrote and conducted in premiere performance, one of the most remarkable pieces of music that has ever been written, the Ninth Symphony. And it is well attested that at the close of that concert, when the orchestra had finished playing and the maestro had laid down his baton, one of the members of the chorus that supported that performance went up to the podium and took Beethoven by the shoulders and turned him around so that he could see the marvelous standing ovation, the raucous ovation he was receiving for his music, because he couldn't hear a thing. Despite that fact, however, Beethoven never let anything get in his way. Not even deafness could keep him from his calling. He continued to write the music that God inspired in his soul until the time of his death at the age of 56. He let nothing get in his way, not even deafness. Moses was the same. He let nothing get in his way. Not the recalcitrance of Pharaoh, who repeatedly refused to let the Hebrew people go. Not the army of the king, nor the waters of the sea. Not the anger of the people at being led into the wilderness, nor their unfaithfulness when they failed to worship God. Not the length of their sojourn in the wilderness, nor his inability to understand all the ways of God. Moses let nothing get in the way of fulfilling his calling to free God's people and to take them to the land God promised. Beethoven wouldn't even let deafness get in the way of his fulfilling his calling. Moses was not cowed by anything that Pharaoh or any leader in Egypt threw in his way. They continued on their course despite every obstacle, despite every danger, to fulfill God's calling in their life. Finally, we come to my third character, probably the biggest character of them all. His name was Albert Schweitzer. Schweitzer is the most contemporary of these three for us. He was three times a doctor. He earned doctoral degrees early in his life in philosophy, in theology, and in music. But then, when he heard about the need for medical missionaries in West Africa, he finally felt, that he had heard the call of God and that this is what God desired his life's work to be. So he went back to school, and in 1913, he earned the degree Doctor of Medicine, his fourth earned doctorate by the age of 35. And he set out for Africa. In the nation of Gabon, just north of Congo, he established his hospital in a little wilderness village called Lambrini. And there he worked until his death in 1965 at the age of 90. In addition to his four earned doctorates and the Albert Schweitzer Hospital in Lambrini that still exists and bears his name, Schweitzer was the recipient of the Nobel Prize for Peace in 1952. Early in his life, Albert Schweitzer's scholarship revolutionized the world. As a theologian, he wrote a multitude of books, among them, The Quest of the Historical Jesus, still a primary text for those who study the New Testament today. As a musician, he not only edited the definitive works of Johann Sebastian Bach, but he redefined the vocation of organ building so that all organs, including this one, that have been built since the time of Schweitzer, have incorporated his wisdom, his innovations, and his insights, so that the clarity of the sound of organs today, as I said, even this one, the clarity of organ sound today is due in large measure to the work of Albert Schweitzer. But he left it all behind to go to Africa, to respond to God's call to minister to the sick. No matter the respected stature he had achieved, no matter the universities that begged him to come to them, no matter the orchestras and concert halls that urged him to play with them, no matter the wealth or the acclaim or the fame, he left it all behind to go to Africa, to respond to God's call to face the challenges and the dangers and the poverty and the uncertainties that doing so entailed. In the same way, Moses left behind the wealth and the safety and the comfort and the promise of his father-in-law's home. He left it all behind him to go back to Egypt, where he was a wanted man, to go back to Egypt to face the Pharaoh and his armies. He was willing, at the call of God, to face the king of Egypt, to act upon his faith in God rather than on his common sense. Moses was willing to follow God's call no matter where it led him, no matter the cost. He let nothing get in his way. He had a singular purpose in his life and work. And he left comfort and safety behind to follow the call of God. These are some of the aspects of Moses' leadership of Israel that we come to understand from the Old Testament text. Aspects of his leadership that we still find in our world today, but we find them in not large measure. We expect our faith as Christians. We expect our faith and our religion to confirm our values and our lifestyles, to tell us that our desires and our prejudices are good and desirable things. We expect our church to meet our needs and keep us comfortable. And we can arrange our lives so that those things happen. But the fact of the matter is, sisters and brothers, it's not about us. It's about God. What Moses wanted wasn't nearly as important as what God wanted. And Moses, like Schweitzer, was willing to leave all that he wanted behind in order to pursue God's calling and to follow what God wanted of him. What Moses needed wasn't even considered in the life of what God needed. Moses' comforts and his safety didn't matter a whit in the face of God, the needs of God's people. Moses' legacy is leadership. But his leadership was not a matter of his own talents and his own abilities nearly so much as Moses' leadership was a matter of his being willing to surrender to God's call and to go God's way. It wasn't about having his needs met or his comforts considered. It wasn't Moses, after all. It wasn't Moses who made himself the towering historical figure he was, but it was God who worked through Moses and Moses' willingness to follow, no matter how difficult the path. Remember the words of the historian? Never since has there arisen a prophet in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. You see, it was the Lord's knowing him face to face that made Moses great, not Moses' greatness that gave him entree into the Lord's presence. We can learn a great deal from the single-mindedness of Lincoln. We can learn a lot from Beethoven's refusal to let anything get in the way of his gifts. And I have learned much from Schweitzer's willingness to abandon everything to follow God's call. For all, they were all of them, like Moses, great leaders in their own right. But it will all be for naught if we do not realize that they were, all of them, first willing to set themselves aside to hear and follow God's call. This is the kind of leadership that is so sorely lacking in our world today and even in our church. For we have been seduced by the notion that we can follow God and still stay comfortable and safe. We can respond to God's call and still have our own needs met. We can hear God's word and not be converted by it because we don't need converting. Still, history cries out for leaders like all of these. And the invitation for God to make of us towering giants of faithfulness and discipleship in history, that invitation is still open. Let there be some who dare to respond. Let there be even a congregation like this one, courageous enough, willing enough to hear God's call and to follow like Moses did, leaving a legacy that will make of God and not of us a towering figure in history. Amen.